Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to the next step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 276 of The Next Step. This is a podcast that looks at the very fabric of our being through the most ancient of all Christian lenses, Armenian Orthodoxy. But hey, this isn't a step back, it's a step forward. So it's polished up for today, called Armadoxy. Yeah, pretty cool, huh? And this podcast is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and is brought to you by the cool folks at epostle.net. If you're ready, let's take the next step. Yeah, sometimes you can tell we're having fun over here. I think most of the time we're having fun, right? It is, well, we are getting ready to say goodbye to the summer over here, and I am so Southern Hemisphere conscious these days, having sun over there in Argentina. I gotta remember that this is saying goodbye to the winter for the folks down under, right? And it is getting close to the autumnal equinox. Just in a couple days, we'll be celebrating that astronomical event. Is it astronomical? It's not cataclysmic, right? Okay, and no. Okay, the astronomical event, you know, when, if you're living on the equator, I guess you get an equal amount of sun and night, of day and night. And I have been on the equator during the spring equinox. I've been there, right on the equator in Rwanda on March 20th. It is phenomenal because, you know, it's whatever they tell you about putting the egg on the side. Yeah, you know, there's some tradition about, like, putting the egg straight up or it'll stay straight up. I tried it that morning for breakfast. It didn't work. But I did have a chance to measure the light. And, yes, it is a 12-hour night, 12-hour day. And there's something about the flushing of the toilets. It goes one way on one side of the equator and goes the other way on the other side. Now, that one I didn't try, although I had an opportunity. I didn't try it, but I think we're doing some preliminary testing. Yes, some preliminary testing on the Southern Hemisphere. And we will have some information. We will get that to you right away as soon as we find out. But I know you didn't tune into this. You didn't tune into this show to find out the direction of toilet water flushing. Yes, and although many religious shows might have a hard time competing against such ponderings of the mind, and might, you know, really even go up against the scientific studies of directionalism and gravity, this show is about Armadoxy, and suffice it to say, we are hitting the autumnal equinox. Yes, it's going to be autumn over here, okay? Oh, wow, what a preface that was, huh? All that to say that we're welcoming in autumn. But I am sitting in Glendale right now, Glendale, California, and I got to tell you, I'm kind of in a good mood this morning because I did something very unusual. I defied the traffic. A couple days ago, I got stuck in the commute from home to the office is about a 10-minute commute. It's 10 miles. It's 10 miles, okay? Exactly. And It should take, on a bad day, it should take maybe 15, 20 minutes. Maybe half an hour. It took me an hour and 45 minutes. And on that day, I vowed in the car, in the solemnity of my car, with the radio blasting to talk radio and with the phone ringing and with me just yelling and screaming. Yes, I know, it's hard to believe that, yes, even I lose it at times. I vowed that I would not sit in that traffic. What a waste of time. And I know people need to do that. And my heart goes out to you. But if there's a way to avoid it, and I think I found it. I've been walking early in the morning. I think I'm switching that out. I'm swapping that out. And instead of walking in the morning, I'm coming into the office early in the morning. And I'm going to try to walk in the evening. So today I'm refreshed. I'm energized. I'm seeing the sun come up. And I'm ready to spend some time with you, my listeners. And that's pretty exciting over here, you know. But I do have to tell you that amidst all of this, you might never guess. In fact, you won't guess what I'm doing for lunch today. Actually, at noon. In a few hours, I'm going to be speaking to the Rotary Club. Now, you won't guess that because of the topic when I tell you. But first, let me tell you who the Rotaries are. I didn't know this. I actually had to look them up because they had called me. Now, I've seen their name all over the place. Every town here in America that you drive into, there is usually, along with Welcome to the City message, there are signs that say, you know, the Kiwanis meet here, the Lions Club meets here, the Elks meet here, and there is also the Rotary Club. But I've never really known what they do. But I opened up their website. We are 1.2 million neighbors, friends, and community leaders who come together to create positive, lasting change in our communities and around the world. Oh, I like that. That sounds like something that I could go and be part of. Anyway, I am going to be with them for lunch. But why do I bring that up? Because I'm going to be speaking. Are you ready for the topic? I can't believe this. They really asked me to speak about this topic. Armenian history and the genocide. What? Over lunch? I mean, like, isn't this like indigestion central? Like, how do you talk about Armenian history without getting everyone after lunch, you know, giving them, you know, injections of caffeine or anything? And then how do you talk about something so intense as genocide, you know, within a few minutes? Introduction to genocide? It's not even a 101 class. It's like a few minutes. But anyway, knowing me, knowing you, you know what I'm about. And so I'm taking up this challenge, and I'm looking forward to it, actually. Actually, not so much to talk about. Of course, definitely I'll go into Armenian history and talk about the genocide, but definitely making the connection, especially to a fine group like this with such outreach in their mission, to talk to them about what's going on in Darfur, to talk about some of the situations, the hotbeds in the world today. And in so doing, making that connection and saying that, okay, we do have this Armenian history, we do have this genocide which Armenians experience, but it's not enough to just commemorate, to talk about. It's up to us to really be the first witnesses to genocide in the world, and then walking in their shoes, in other words, taking steps to help these people. And I go back to this very basic premise. I mean, being a genocide survivor myself, my grandparents having gone through it, I mean, what is the only wish that they had was that at some point in 1915, if somebody had thought about, hey, what about these Armenians? Is it enough to just look at them, or do we need to take some walks? Do we need to walk in their shoes and help them out and reach out to them? So that's what we do here at In Issues Ministries. Basically, we're going to be passing that information on to the Rotary. So I'm very excited, honored to be part of a good group like that. And I will definitely give you some information about that, share some thoughts with you next week. But for today, I'm going to be sharing a lot of stuff with you. There's a few things going on. This next week begins the Bishops' Conference in Etchmiadzin. I'm going to share some thoughts about that. We've got the Moscow Cathedral, the consecration, which took, I think there was like about 12 bishops. If you haven't seen the pictures, it's very, very impressive to see all this this gear going into the Moscow Cathedral. Some thoughts about that. I'll definitely put some pictures on our show notes today so you can see it. Just very, very impressive. I want to talk mostly about developing on the theme that came out in the sermon last Sunday. It was the Feast of Holy Cross. And in that sermon, we'll have a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Couple thoughts that came out and became public. I know I've shared this with you here on Next Step, but it became more public, having an opportunity to speak about it from the pulpit and then later being up on YouTube. And that's the idea of what is Old Testament mythology. How necessary is that to the Christian experience? Armenian Orthodoxy takes it in another direction. Armodoxy definitely is one that's saying, let's rethink that one. So I want to share some thoughts with you about that Old Testament mythology. Did you hear that the Voyager spacecraft left the solar system? Can you believe that? Left the solar system. What's so big about that? Well, it's the first object made by human beings that has transcended the boundaries of the solar system. Yeah. Okay. You're saying, well, again, like you talked about some phenomena about toilet water spinning, and now you're talking about these spacecrafts. What's that have to do with Armenian Orthodoxy, with religion? Right after the song of the day, okay? See all the things that are possible early in the morning. Pailun Arusyag, that is bright Venus. It's the morning star, isn't it? Bright Venus. I'm feeling good today. That is off of an album of minstrel songs, Armenian minstrel songs, a different genre of Armenian music. I'll put a link on our show notes. You can check it out. All kinds of great music. You know, when you got folksy stuff going on in your head, folksy stuff in your life, in your soul, so many different varieties. I hope you enjoyed it. Last Sunday was the Feast of the Holy Cross, and it is one of the five major feasts of the Armenian Church. And I had a chance to celebrate the Divine Liturgy here at St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, and also deliver the sermon. And I have to admit that the sermon was flowing in a direction that I wasn't prepared for, but throughout the sermon I was saying, wow, I've got to readdress these points and go into it a little bit deeper. The sermon is on YouTube. It's on our YouTube channel, and you can listen to it. It's in both languages. It's in Armenian for the first 10, 15 minutes, the second 10 minutes in English. I believe altogether it's 20 minutes, so it's probably about a 10 and 10 split. Do check it out, but you'll probably get a little bit more out of it if you do understand both languages, because I went in two different directions, each language in a different direction. I want to share some thoughts with you on both parts of it. The first being, we talked about the idea of the Holy Cross as a symbol. The second part I want to talk to you about is the idea of light. And the reason why both of these come together, because the passage of the day was from John chapter 3. And if you'd like, you can open it up, but probably most people are familiar with the words. It actually follows this encounter that Jesus has with Nicodemus. And of course, John chapter 3, verse 16, even if you're not familiar with the language of it, even if you've not read it, you've at least seen that icon almost, John 3:16. If you've had a drink at In-N-Out Burger, you know that underneath the cup it says John 3:16. Interestingly enough, it is one of the most quoted passages of the Bible. In fact, it is even said that it is the gospel in miniature, in shorthand, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. So that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. Now, I did not preach about this. I preached about the two parts, because in the passage that we read in church begins from John chapter 3, verse 13, and ends with verse 21. So I preached about the two pieces of bread that sandwiches the meat. In other words, the first part of the passage and then the last part of the passage. So let me read the entire thing to you, and it'll give us some context to what we're talking about today, okay? So this is Jesus talking, and he says, no one has ascended into heaven but he who descended from heaven, the Son of Man. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God sent the Son into the world, not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. He who believes in him is not condemned. He who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only Son of God. And this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come into the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. And he who does what is true comes to the light, that it may be clearly seen that his deeds have been wrought in God. So there you have it. In this one little passage, we talk about the Old Testament mythology, and we have light. So this is where I came from, and this is how it developed. Let me share some thoughts with you. Jesus talking about as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. Okay, this is the sign. And basically, it's an Old Testament story where there were poisonous snakes. Moses lifts up his staff, and he's given the command by God that if you lift it up, that whoever sets his focus on that staff will be immune to the poison of the snakes. In other words, it's their salvation. That staff, lifting it up, is their salvation. They are saved from death. And Jesus made the metaphor. He made that metaphor very clearly, saying that, okay, the new sign is coming up. And that new sign is the sign of the Son of Man, the cross. Whoever sees that cross, whoever looks up at the cross, will be saved. Because in that action, there is salvation. Now, what I'm sharing with you here, and this is a pure Armadox approach, is basically Jesus spoke to the times. The idea of the Old Testament mythology, and I'm using that term mythology not to say that it is a lie, it is a legend, it is fake. It just means that it builds into the myth. In other words, it builds into the story of how it's presented. For instance, yesterday we were looking at pictures of the cathedral being consecrated in Moscow. And you see many officials there, including government officials. And a comment was made to me that, you know, these government officials, these people don't even believe, they don't even know how to make the sign of the cross. And yet they are standing next to the clergy in solidarity. And in a sense, you know, there is a myth that goes with history. For instance, when you think about Saint Gregory and Durtad, one is a politician, one Durtad is the king, and Saint Gregory is the saint, or the clergyman. Let's call it what it is, okay, the clergyman. But somehow through the years, in 1700 years, you have this idea that somehow the clergy and the politicians, they've gone hand in hand, and they've made it work. And you somehow, this is how the myth gets developed, okay? There's a mythology that, you know, you don't know who Durtad, he was a king. He had his eyes set on Haripsime. He was going after something else, and then he saved St. Gregory, and he became canonized. He became a saint, too. So, God forgive me that we're talking about them on such human levels, but you got to remember that we're all human. We're all human. There are no, there is no one who is perfect except for Christ. And so when we talk about saints, yes, canonize the saints as Saint Gregory or Saint Durtad, definitely these are people that the church wants us to look at because they led exemplary lives as humans. In other words, with all their frailties, with all of their sin. And these were the big sins, right? Pride, lust, gluttony, envy, covetousness, all of the big ones. They're people. They had them. And yet, the church says, look at them. They were able to rise to the occasion. And so there was a mythology that develops. And so we have this idea that throughout the centuries, the Catholicoi, the bishops, hand in hand with the politicians, with the statesmen, with the kings, the emperors, got together and they developed these churches, the structure, the infrastructure. Well, you got to remember these were all people, and so they had their moments too. And maybe, God forgive me, maybe they were all just wonderful people, but I think they were wonderful in a different sense. They were wonderful in the fact that they were human, and they give us an opportunity to say that, yes, even in our frailty, even with our sins, we can rise to particular occasions. Okay? So, when Jesus talks about the Son of Man must rise, and there will be a new sign. Here is the new sign, and that is the sign of the cross. And the Old Testament story that he tells right there is specifically for the people of the day. And I venture to say that if he spoke to us today, if he was speaking for us today, he might use different metaphors. In fact, not only he might, I'm sure he would. There are stories that wouldn't make sense to people today. There are stories that would make incredible sense. For instance, let's say if he was talking to the people of America, and he would use metaphors, icons. For instance, the flag, the symbol of the flag, or the Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem of the United States, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave? Okay, so there is this beautiful symbol. And he might say that, okay, look at the symbol of the flag. It was still waving. Yet the symbol of the Son of Man will rise, and every eye that is adjusted on it will be saved. Yes, because that flag, through the battles, through the bombs bursting in air, that flag was still waving. So too, look at the power of the cross, still standing despite all of the evil. And I ventured to say that even for the Armenian people, of course, on Sunday I was speaking at the St. Peter Armenian Church here in Glendale. Big, big Armenian community, in fact, mostly Armenian speaking. And I said that if Jesus was talking to us, he might use metaphors which included General Antranik. He might use Sayat Nova as this prince of peace and of love in the music that was still standing there despite all of the horrific events of the day. And in this sense, I went one step further and I said that we've got to break apart from the Old Testament mythology. Because Jesus spoke to a group of people that understood it at the time. But don't confuse that. Don't confuse the Old Testament for being salvific. In other words, there is no salvation in the Old Testament. Yes, there's beautiful stories in there. There are stories that bring you to faith. But just remember that these stories were in the context of a group of people, context of a culture. And so just as he spoke about Moses lifting up the staff in the wilderness, he might speak to us here in America as lifting up the Star-Spangled Banner. He might. Now, I know this could get me in trouble, but I firmly believe this, that when we talk about Christ, we're talking about universal truths. We're not talking about truths that are specific to a group of people. And I've shared this with you in the past. When you look at Jesus, you cannot say that Jesus is a Jew. No, it's not. He's not. I spoke to a rabbi Lemley here in Los Angeles, and she said that the idea of coming, the lineage being traced to the mother in Judaism is about 2,000 years old. Well, think about that for a moment, okay? In all Middle Eastern cultures specifically, they're very patriarchal. And this is what prompted me to ask the rabbi, like, why is it in Judaism that the Jewishness of a person being a Jew, is defined by the mother? In other words, if the mother is Jewish, the child is Jewish. And that's kind of odd, especially in the Middle East, right, where they are patriarchal societies. What is your father? It doesn't matter. If your mother is Jewish, the child is Jewish. When did this change? About 2,000 years ago. Now, this is what she told me 2,000 years ago. Okay, well, let's think now. Let's think about the events of 2,000 years ago. If Jesus' ancestry is traced to his mother, then he is a Jew. Okay. But if Jesus' ancestry is traced to his father, then he is definitely God. Correct? I mean, that's what it comes down to. That's how simple it is. So many times we make the mistake of putting Jesus within the context of the Old Testament and then a follow-up with the New Testament. Now, definitely, the Old Testament has beauty in it. There is ancient wisdom. There is ancient truths in there that you can absorb, and just like any other tradition, you should be familiar with it. But somehow, because it is bundled together inside of this Bible, what we call the Bible, people assume that it is a follow-up. In other words, the New Testament is dependent on the Old Testament. It is to a certain degree. It is in terms of the stories, in terms of the continuity. But in itself, Jesus being the Christ comes to us with unique truths. Truths that go beyond time, that go beyond temporal existence. And so you have this unique case that I'm making in Armodoxy, is that Jesus is really transcends even ethnicity. And so as an Armenian, I look at Jesus and I see him as an Armenian because I pray to him in Armenian. I know African-American culture here in the United States, you go into many African-American churches, or predominantly where the congregation is African-American, and you have images of Jesus that are much darker, much darker. And the actual physical icons, you know, they're darker. You go to Egypt, take a look at the icons that develop out of the Coptic church, and Jesus looks very Coptic. It's a projection of who you are. Your God, that is your God, okay? And so you project on God the attributes that you have. But this is not to say that you wipe out the Old Testament, but it is to say you need to put it in perspective. the events that Jesus talks about, Moses lifting up the serpent in the wilderness, was an opportunity for him to talk to a group of people in terms that they would understand. Much like when he spoke about the grain of wheat falling into the earth and dying, well, he was talking to a group of people that were farmers, people whose lives was made up of agriculture, okay, and they understood this concept. You go talk to an investment banker, he might not understand all of the dynamics involved in farming, right? But to the people Jesus was talking about, a grain of wheat must fall, it must die, and then from it, it's going to produce many grains. Jesus definitely, to the investment banker, would have used different metaphors. And okay, you have your stock options, you have your investments over here. You want to diversify your portfolio so that as it dies, as the other one, whatever. I'm just talking with words that I don't even know the meaning of. But Jesus does. He knows the audience that he's addressing. And so what I said in my sermon there was exactly that point, that Jesus knew the audience and he knows who we are. And so he might use. In other words, don't get caught up in the mythology, go right to what Jesus is talking about, which is the sign of the Son of Man, which is the cross. That sign that he will be lifted up, that sign now becomes the sign of salvation. And certainly St. Paul says this. He says the story of the cross, what we talk about the cross, the expression of the cross. What's the word that he uses? He says it is folly. In other words, it's humorous. It's ridiculous. That's even a better word. It's ridiculous for people who do not believe. But for us who are saved, it is the way of life. It is our salvation. Okay, in the same way, Jesus is saying, okay, this is what happened in the Old Testament. Here's a story. Now, here's the real story. This is beyond ethnicity. And this is why many times I've shared with you in the past about my aversion to taking these stories out of the Old Testament as literally happening. The story of Adam and Eve is not about two people. It's not about two human beings living in a garden and seeing a snake. It's about humanity. It's a beautiful story. It's about humanity exerting its will above that of God. And God saying that, no, this is the way it should be. In other words, when you start dabbling with what God has set up, well, then you are the new God, and then you better be ready to suffer the consequences. Think about what we do with our natural resources, with what we do with matters of war and issues of war. And well, there's consequences to all that. So you see that these stories, these myths play out, and they give us instruction in life. But let's not confuse them with salvation. So Jesus talks about this. This is part one, okay? I wanted to share that with you, okay? The idea of Old Testament mythology. Part two, he continues. Remember I said that passage, God so loved the world, is sandwiched in between this, the story of Moses in the wilderness, and the second part, which Jesus talks about, is about light. He talks about he who believes is not condemned, and he says, and this is the judgment. This is verse 19. This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light, and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does what is true comes to the light, that it may be clearly seen that his deeds have been wrought in God. Now, think about this in these terms, okay? Last week, what happened? The Voyager spacecraft exited our solar system, okay? Now, we found out about it. We got confirmation of that last week. Scientists here on Earth got confirmation. Because in actuality, the Voyager had left our solar system August 27th. Not a month ago, but a year and a month ago. In other words, it took the light, it was so far out that it took the light or the signal from that spacecraft. It took it a year and a month to reach us here in here on the planet Earth. Okay, so now let's think about that, okay? Here's the light coming, light speed, 186,000 miles a second, okay? It's coming at you. It takes a year and a month to get to you. The spacecraft is on the edge of the solar system. It's going out. Think about how big this universe is, that it took that long for light to travel at that speed. And at the speed that the spacecraft is going, it's going at 30,000 miles a second or a minute, something like this, some absurd number. Let's just say it's definitely faster than what you do on Interstate 5. At that speed, it's going to take 40,000 years. 40,000 years before it will reach the next star. Wow. This is a big place that we call the universe. And this is just interstellar. In other words, from our star, from sun to the next star. Hundreds of thousands of hours and years. It's a long time, okay? So let's go off and just say that the universe is big. And in that bigness, in that incredible amount of time, and in that incredible amount of space and time, we define what we call life, our reality, okay? But it is much, much bigger, obviously. Okay, now, let's now tie it with the passage, okay, about light. Now, this light that was coming from out there, okay, it reaches us here on the planet Earth 1 year and 1 month later. Now, when it reaches us, what do we have? We have these light receptors, or we have these big antennae. We have these big satellite dishes that are just bringing in and focusing in. Now, imagine if this dish were upside down, or pointed in another direction. What would happen to that light? It would miss us completely, right? What happens to us? There is light that is coming to us all the time, the light which we call God. Okay, and we are at different points in our lives. We are in different directions. We are antennae. We have it up. We're looking for that spiritual oneness. But what happens in most of life? That life comes to us, but we're focused somewhere else. Okay, we're in some other direction. And so when Jesus says this, and this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men loved the darkness rather than light. Well, why? Because people are looking at that darkness. We're always pointing towards that darkness because there's so much more of it. But when that light comes, what happens? That darkness is eliminated. Now, I want to take it one step further. If we believe God is within us, right, then you are light. Uh-huh. Okay, now, follow me this. Okay, this is with this because this is incredibly armadoxy. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," referring to himself. And then what does he do? He throws that on us. He says, "You are the light of the world." And this is the challenge for us. If God is inside of us, do you realize that everyone around us has that God in them and has that ability to transmit that light? So what happens in life is we see so many people all around us, but we're not focused in on the right places. You see, we're waiting for that light signal to come from the heavens or from a distant star, okay? And we're focusing our antennae over there. And if we're lucky, we'll hear Voyager talking to us. But we're not focusing on one another. We've got people all around us who are filled with energy, filled with goodness, filled with love, who are filled with insight, who are filled with God. But what are we doing? Well, we're degrading them. We're humiliating them. And at the worst, we're picking fights with them. We are engaged in war with them. And so what happens all of a sudden? We have deteriorated as a group of people so that we're no longer looking for God within each other. We're looking for God outside of us. So when Jesus talks to these people and he says, as Moses lifted up the staff in the wilderness, he knew what he was talking about. He says, you guys are looking for something outside of yourself. Okay, there's that symbol. He says, I'm going to give you the symbol of the cross. And he continues by talking about the light being absent from the world. Well, where is that light? Guess what? If I stand next to you, we're lit up. If you stand next to your friend, your sister, your brother, you're lit up. You can't be otherwise because of the presence of God. But what you can do is, well, you could deflect. You could turn your head around and not accept it. And that's what we're doing. We have people on this planet right now, all around us, that are filled with the love of God. They have incredible insight. They have so much to teach us. But we're looking outside. Armadoxy is the closest thing that you can get to Christ's message, because it is void of all of the hoopla. It is void of all of the excesses. And you get right down to the message and you see the presence of God within each other. That's why when Jesus came, what was it? He says, I came to my own, but they didn't want to hear it. Okay? He came into the Jewish community. They didn't want to hear it. He says, move on. He says, if people don't want to hear it, you wipe the dust off of your feet and you say, enough. I'm moving on, because we need to spread this message of peace. And so now we come to the final portion. Okay, I shared with you about the Moses story. The second one was light. And now what happens in Moscow? Well, in Moscow, they consecrated the new Armenian church. It is the cathedral, excuse me. Cathedral, in other words, the home for the diocese in Moscow. I believe it is the largest concentration of Armenians outside of Yerevan. So they had 12 bishops. I think I counted 12. I'll put the picture so you can do the counting yourself. And these bishops consecrated this cathedral. And you could see all the beautiful pictures. And you look at all of the beautiful work in that church. It is incredible. It's incredible, the pictures, the icons, and the iconography. But what's interesting in this set of pictures that has been presented to us, they're all about people, with the exception of one picture, which is the Catholicos' hand cross. The rest are all about people. People here and there. Now, who are the people? Well, it's some pictures of the hierarchs. Well, because they're flashy. But what you don't see are the faithful, the people who believe. Who are the people behind the lines? And now you start thinking about, well, what is the enduring power of this cathedral? In other words, we got the Catholicos there, we've got the bishops, we've got the president, we've got people and the faithful, but what is the one thing that is going to stay? And it's the building. Interesting, huh? Now, think about it in these terms. Jesus comes and he says, he looks at the temple of the Jews and he says, you see this temple? I'll tear it down and build it up in 3 days. And so right away, people start thinking that, okay, well, Jesus was against buildings. He's against the concrete. No, he wasn't. Actually, he goes into that temple. So there's something to be said about sacred space, about space that is sectioned off as sacred. He's there for a reason. What he's talking, of course, about is his body, his sacred temple. He says, it will be torn down in 3 days. He's talking about the resurrection. So again, it's very important that we put it in perspective, how we look at it. And as I looked at these pictures of the cathedral, and just about every day now we're at the diocese here in Los Angeles, another big edifice, you see that really it's important to have sacred spaces where people are inspired and can call sanctuary. Unfortunately, we're in this anti-materialist mood many times as Christians. And we say, well, we don't need these buildings. We don't need the tangible. Yes, you do. You do need tangibles, because it connects you with something greater than yourself. What you don't need is the hoopla that goes with all of this. In other words, the hoopla being the excesses, the baggage that goes with it. And here's the baggage, okay? You see that bishop? You see that Catholicos? This is what they think about. Well, this is human, okay? This is the stuff that brings it down to minutiae, and you become obsessed with the events rather than looking at the beauty of what's in front of you. That's looking at the darkness, okay? You're the receptor for light. This is what we do, unfortunately. We pick on people, we look at people, and we see darkness rather than the good, rather than the beauty. And if you look close enough, you find that beauty in people. You find that beauty all around you. When we talk about Armadoxy, you know, the other day I was talking about the show that Anush does, Inside the Pomegranate. You know, she's always engaged with the homeless. You think about Armadoxy in that sense, right? What is she talking about? She's talking about finding the image of God within the least likely places. I think this is the challenge before us. Okay, listen, I took you around. Okay, there's quite a bit of places that we went today. I hope it's given you a lot to start, not indigestion, but to digest. Here's Susie to tell you how you can digest this show. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazkin calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazkin.
Wow, that is so cool. We got a whole band in the studio. Before we move them out, let me just tell you, let me reiterate, what Susie says is very important. Important to get connected. Listen, you know what's happening this week? As we're speaking right now, the bishops of the Armenian Church are en route to Armenia. Now, this is the first time in a long, long time that the bishops are getting together for a meeting. Now, first of all, you should know that supposedly, on paper, the Armenian Church is a democracy. In other words, it is not made up of only bishops. Like it or not, the Armenian Church is not like the Roman Church in that it is not just the clergy that have a voice, but the people have a voice. Now, in reality, what has happened lately, it's basically clergy and basically hierarchs. And so these bishops' synods were very few. In fact, there is one that took place in 1969. That was the last time majority of the bishops got together for a synod. It was in Holy Etchmiadzin. And if I remember right, two bishops from Antilias were invited to participate. Now, Antilias being a Catholicosate, they consecrate bishops. Etchmiadzin being a Catholicosate, they consecrate bishops. For the first time, there's going to be a meeting of all the bishops of the Armenian Church in Holy Etchmiadzin this coming week. They're going to be talking about a couple issues, and we'll talk more about them next week. They're going to be talking about baptism and then the canonization of the saints, which is it's more complex than you might imagine. They want to canonize, they want to make saints out of the martyrs of 1915. And on the surface, that sounds, woohoo, let's do it, you know? Underneath, you got a problem of not everybody there was believers, and not everyone died because of martyrdom. But still, these are the angels on the pinhead kind of stories, because in reality, you're talking about martyrdom collectively. So how they work that out, how they come up with the idea of that, remember what I told. That's why, those of you who figured it out know why I talked about that mythology, okay? Because as time goes by, myths grow. So you kind of assume that Durtad and Gregory, God forgive me for saying this, that they were just regular human beings, and they had all of their frailties. They had lust, envy, pride, covetousness, gluttony, anger, sloth, okay? They had all of those things going in them, but they were able to rise to the occasion. And now you've got to think about that, because as time is going by, you think of Gregory and Durtad, these saintly things, or Vartan and everything. As time's going by, the 1.5 million martyrs certainly sounds like something to contend with and say that, okay, let's canonize, let's make them saints. I gave you a lot to think about today, and I hope that you will take some time to digest all this. I'm going to be back next week, and we'll be looking at what comes out of the Bishop Synod. But what I'm talking about today is here at Epostle, what Susie is talking about. This is really something revolutionary. What we're doing is we're really looking within, looking at the faith and not the players. Looking at the faith and not the players is very important, because the players come and go. They are temporal. The faith has to be above that. When Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he's talking about something that is not connected to Judaism, that is not connected to your life, that is not connected to anything that you can imagine. It is the way, it is the truth, and the life. It gets you from point A to point B in purity, in the light. Okay? That's what we're talking about, the Christ force. That's what Jesus was. He was the Christ. And here at Epostle, when we talk about Armodoxy, we're trying to strip away all of the hoopla and get to the basic faith that's under it. I have talked too much today, but I'm enjoying it. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing this. I'm going to take a break right now and look forward to seeing you again next week. In the meantime, please join us on all of our websites at epostle.net. That's really easy to remember. It's Apostle with an E. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. And of course, on Facebook, you have Epostle, you have St. Peter Armenian Church, and you have the flagship in issues. For the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, and for Vahe, our webmaster, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.